Hi, Michael. Are you with us?
I'm with you, standing by.
Oh, thank you. Good day to you. Artists, you can find out more about Michael Woodward at licensingcourse.com. And I'm going to spell that because if you're like me, I simply have the hardest time getting the word licensing spelled correctly. It's LicensingCourse.com. All one word, licensing course. Michael has been in this industry for 30 years. I have to tell you, it just gives me pause, Michael. He formed one of the first art licensing companies in Europe, and he's the author of Art Licensing 101. He has an enormous knowledge base and can only give us a particular range today because what he knows could fill volumes. We are truly lucky to have him here. Michael, I'm going to come back a few minutes before you're through and see if there is time for questions. But okay. Do not panic, artists. If there are not, Michael has graciously agreed to work through email. So, Michael, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Okay, thank you. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about the segment in terms of what I'm going to talk about. It's going to be the keys of licensing your art. And the accent I'm going to do today is on research. But first, what I want to do is just give those people who don't know a lot about licensing very, very small synopsis of what licensing is all about. Now, the benefits of licensing are twofold. One is the additional income and the opportunity to earn residual income. That's the same kind of income that TV and film stars and musicians earn by inventing a song or acting in a film, and for years later, they get their royalties depending on how much it's shown. Now, in the terms of licensing, quite often, the deals that are done with licensees, that's the people who take licenses, are on a royalty basis. And on a royalty basis, that means that whatever sells, you get a small royalty, which can be as little as 2 or 3% to as much as 10%, for posters and fine art prints. So a very successful print or line of prints, and someone like Thomas Kincaid, who you all heard of, has made millions from the licensing of his art and the selling of originals that have been converted into editions and then onto products that are too numerous to mention. I think at the last count, he probably had 70, 80 products out there. Now, the other reason for licensing, and this particularly is very, very much relates to fine artists who often sometimes turn their nose up at licensing, thinking it's beneath them. And I've had that often. Quite surprisingly, artists that work in major galleries and are getting quite good sums for their money think that licensing their art onto prints or posters is a very bad thing. It needn't necessarily be, but one has to be prudent about watching what the work appears on. But if the artist is in control of that, the artist can say yes or no. Now, one of the things that fine artists can do is get their work into fine art posters. And we're talking now about the very high-end museum-quality posters that can be printed on very good paper, and they will sell to major galleries and museum stores, and it allows, to my mind, those people that can't afford $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 for an original, the ability to still enjoy that artist's work. And if anything else, if it's not the money, that in itself takes that artist out of the elitist world into a world which allows more people to enjoy good art. And that's one thing I would say to all fine artists who basically feel that licensing is beneath them. The aspect that's most important for those artists who are on a pretty high level already is that it can increase exposure and awareness nationally and internationally. So they may be working in the Santa Fe area and have a few galleries around America. They might be in the California area or the New York area, by having a really good fine art poster out there, it can actually sell all over the world, which again increases awareness. So the money might not be great if they only do probably 3 or 4 posters a year, but in terms of exposure, that is incredible publicity, which they couldn't afford to buy. Now, I'll just give you a few of the opportunities in licensing. And I'm going to dwell on a lot of the basics. I'm just going to try and cover this very quickly so we can get down some nitty-gritty on the research reason for you know, what I'm going to be talking about today. Opportunities. Posters, prints. These are framed prints that appear in stores and galleries. Limited editions, which is a higher end of product. Giclées, which is a massive industry now, on canvas or paper, very high quality, and that's the kind of product that can be sold to interior design projects for hotels and offices. That's for those artists that don't want to get involved in the lower end of the other aspects of licensing. Then we've got greetings cards, stationery, gift products, calendars, jigsaws, stationery, home accessories, which has been a real growth market, which includes rugs and pillows and fabrics, and then things like ceramics, napkins, partyware, etc., etc. Now, the first thing for anybody that wants to get into licensing, you've got to realize that you're running a business. And a lot of artists just simply think that licensing is a nice, easy way to make some extra money. They start sending their JPEGs to the art submission departments. They send CDs out. They print flyers. And really and truly, they're not equipped and they're not educated and they don't know enough about licensing to actually enter the marketplace. It's a bit like opening a restaurant and you've never actually learned to cook or go to the culinary school to learn about the basics of how to run a restaurant. So basically, I always feel that education is the first thing. The Licensing Art 101 book and the licensing course I've written were written specifically to help artists with those essentials, sort of how to get organized, the scanning aspects, how to do that properly. So many artists have the little flatbed scanners on their desktop, and they believe that's good enough to send to a major publisher, and in most cases it's not. Keeping a proper record system, how to do proper presentations, and having a good basic license agreement so that when you actually license a design to a manufacturer, you basically got the foundations of a good deal. And the other aspect of this is being able to negotiate properly and not say, well, what do you think? What's the price that you can pay? You've got to sort of know the kind of prices and ask the right questions. And that's why in my courses, I basically try and help people to how to negotiate a deal, because so many people undersell themselves. Now, a license itself, I'm going to touch on this, the final thing in this basics part of the segment. A licensor is basically you. You're the person who basically is licensing the design. The licensee is the person who basically takes the license, who buys the license, if you will. The terms are the terms and conditions that license is granted. And what must be defined in there is the actual product itself, and that should be very specific. If it's tin mugs or ceramic mugs, put tin mugs or ceramic mugs. Basically, one can actually license, in many cases, a melamine, which is in partyware, and one can license ceramics. So the actual product itself can be very defined so that one can actually then not get into trouble over cross-licensing, be very specific. The term is very important, and specifying how long the client can use the actual design, the territory in which the client can actually sell the design. So be specific. Say North America if they only sell in North America. If they want world rights, say to them, do you sell all over the world? And say, well, yes, we can do. We sell everywhere. But if you say, well, do you sell in Australia? And they say, oh, no. Do you sell in Hong Kong? No. Do you sell in Japan? No. Do you sell in India? No. Exclude them from the license. Possibly some of those markets may open up later on down the line, and you want to keep rights free that a client isn't using. Then you've got the advance. That's for the fee that you're going to get for the design and the royalty rate. And that's, again, very important. 1 or 2 points on the royalty rate can make a huge difference if you get a winning design. So if somebody offers you 5% and you say, well, I normally get 6%, if you get a few thousand in royalties in, that can make the difference of a few hundred dollars. So these are the things you need to study beforehand, and they're fundamental to running a business. So if you want to go into licensing, please, you must educate yourself to start with. Otherwise, you're going to get into hot water, and you're going to end up signing contracts that a few years down the line you wish you never had signed. So now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get into, you know, research. Many of you have probably heard me before, but those of you who don't know that research, in my mind, is the key to successful licensing. So now I'm going to dive right in and talk about how to do your research. First of all, you need to study the market itself. Look at your work in relation to the marketplace. Now, the marketplace now, more than ever, is basically, I wouldn't say flooded with designs, although many of the clients say they're getting so many designs in. What's happened in the last few years, because of the advent of the internet, websites, JPEGs, digital world, it allows anybody, anywhere all over the world to actually submit work. It was more difficult in the old days because you had to print proper presentations. Digital world didn't exist. As the digital world has grown, it's allowed more and more artists to sort of come into the marketplace. And we know that at the licensing show and at Certex, there are far more people now attending, far more people taking booths. It used to be the domain of agents and artists that were doing very, very well. Now I see a lot of artists just stepping in there who've not done licensing before, taking a booth and putting their toe in the water, so to speak. But I would first of all advise everybody to ensure that they study the marketplace before you delve into licensing, so you don't waste a lot of time, energy and money and set it up properly. So, the first thing, what product areas interest you? Now, look at those products very carefully. If it's fine art posters, prints, you know, framed prints, giclées, it could be mass market material, it may be fine art material, and you've got to look at your work honestly and objectively. It's no good going for fine art work if you're doing very simple decorative images. They're just not going to hack it in the fine art world. What you have to do is then look at the other areas of the market that your work suits. If you're a greetings card artist, then look at greetings cards. Study the market. Look at all the companies that you can find. Go into stores. And I'm not talking about going in one or two stores. You've got to cover everything. Cover the small mom and pop stores. Then go into Borders. Then go into Barnes & Noble, then go into your local supermarket. Look at all the different myriad of cards out there and look at your work in relation to that work and see where it fits. And quite often, particularly in greetings cards, I have artists send me in material and have you heard of the Scream, that famous picture? Somebody sent me some work like that with this disembodied head screaming and these manic people like zombies, and they thought really seriously that I could license their work into the greetings card market. Now, they're living in cloud cuckoo land. Basically, you've got to look at what people buy, what the big retailers buy, and it's basically the kind of work that will sell across America, not in one little locale. I get this all the time, that an artist has been to an art festival and they've had people buy their work, friends have said their work is good, and they may live in Florida and it's pictures of little Florida scenes and flowers and sort of birds of paradise and really very specifically Florida. And then they expect that to sell right across America in Colorado and Seattle and New York. where really and truly it's not going to sell. Not as a little greetings card, local cards will sell locally. When you're working on a national level or international level, you have to look at what that market sells. One of the things about greetings card particularly is the fact that it's an emotion. It's first of all that it's for women. It's also something that they can sell 5 or 10,000 cards, not 50, 60 or 100. So therefore the kind of work has to have mass appeal and not just that little niche appeal. The high end of the art market offers lots of opportunity for those artists that are doing major paintings. And there are one aspect of this that, again, it's a mistake that a lot of artists make. If you go into a major store or you go into or see a publisher online, you'll see that invariably many of the published pieces are in series. They're either pairs or sets of four, or it might be 6 or 8 pieces that are in matching pairs that formulate a range of product. They're not just simply individual pictures that have got totally different color palettes. And I'm going to go on to color palettes and trends later, which are very important. But you must look at your work in relation to that marketplace. The giclée market's a very strong market. In fact, canvases are now very strong in the high street retailers, as well as selling well for the interior design market. The beauty of giclées, particularly from a publishing aspect, is the publisher doesn't have to print 1,000 or 2,000 pieces at the beginning. He can basically show those images to his clients and they can order on demand. And that's a new aspect to the industry. It's called print on demand. And interior designers can then order different sizes. They can say, I want 20 pieces at 20 by 16. I want 3 pieces at 36 by 24. And I'd like a couple really big pieces at 48 inches. Therefore, it's all print by on demand. That is a very good market to be in, and something that I'm very interested in, because it's a higher end and it's something that you can get better work out there. Just going back to greetings cards, one of the things that one must look at is where you stand in terms of the rest of the market. Look at the traditional side of it, the humor side of it, the contemporary aspect of it, whether it's cut-out cards you can do. A lot of handmade cards are now made into mass production because of the advent of China being so good now at doing paper cutouts. They can produce handmade cards, sell them for $2 or $3, whereas they were $5 and $10 in years gone by. Cards with captions. So again, if you just want to sell your art for greetings cards, you've got to realize a lot of it needs captions for it to actually work, because that's, in fact, the sentiment is what sells most greetings cards. There are things like the Greetings Card Association, where you can go on their website and they will give you a rundown of what the greetings cards industry is all about. And it opens your eyes to the specifics and the demarcations of who buys cards for what and when. And I think anybody that wants to go into greetings cards must study that very, very carefully. So now we get on to the research aspect of how to produce work that sells. So we've said, first of all, visit stores. Also visit websites. I do a lot of my research on the web, and you can actually drag pieces often. I mean, this is not to steal images. There's an aspect of this that you must be very careful about. But you can download little tiny JPEGs, little GIFs, that put them in a file to look when you do your research, which is what I do. And by doing that, you can then go back to that file and look at the colors. You start to see over a period a formula that a lot of people use. And you see the color ranges that they're using, the palettes they're using. And you start to see a picture of where the market is at this moment in time as you go from publisher to publisher to publisher, and you look at the specific subjects like a landscape. Look at it on 10 websites and see the similarity of what the publishers are doing. The products themselves, in any other market as well, you go onto their websites, look at the products that people are actually selling. You'll notice that one company will only do photographic. So don't, for God's sake, send them little illustrations that have got no relationship to what they do. Some card companies just do photographic humor. Some just do general photographic. Others do a mixture, and they have various ranges within their company. They'll do illustration work. They'll do maybe seasonal Christmas work. Then they'll do everyday work, and they may do some stationery ideas as well. So again, each of those clients that you want to submit work to, study them and make sure your work is compatible. 90% of every single submission I get is totally not pitched for the licensing industry. And a lot of it's a total waste of time. So that shows you there's a lot of work to be done out there by artists and illustrators and photographers to study the market prior to entering it, because many of those people, their work just simply isn't suitable. Now, trends and colors that are being used across the marketplace are very, very important. It's actually become one of the most crucial issues for any publisher out there. I'll explain a little bit of background of how this started. Many of the major publishers started to do more and more research about what sells. And there are companies out there that actually do trend reports and color palette reports. And they forecast what the colors are going to be. And they formulate things like global, or they formulate another global bazaar has been a big one. Another trend called spa, another trend called California dreaming, so on and so forth. And a lot of it comes from the fashion industry, where a print might come out on a particular dress. It might be a black and white kind of look. It might be a paisley kind of thing. And suddenly, a year or so later, that starts to filter through into the home accessory market. Now, there are people that sell this information. And I'm going to give you one or two websites. Not that you're going to go out and spend $1,500, but it gives you an idea. It keeps you in touch with those where this information comes from. The reason that the trends have become very important is that the major corporations, including the big retailers as well as the publishers, buy this information and they buy into those trends. So they start to formulate those trends within their range of products. So what then happens is the retailer, like JCPenney or Target, will go out with a shopping list. And they're looking for global. They're looking for landscapes with a particular Tuscany bent. Tuscan's been very big, as you've noticed. Now they're still doing Tuscan, but they're moving the colors because they've got bored with the oranges and browns and umbers and so on, and the yellow ochres. Now they're bringing greens in there, sage greens, and one or two other colors, just to change the palette, move it on a little bit. And some of these trends actually last a long time. They can start in say, 2006, and you'll still see that trend operating in 2009, but it will have moved slowly and gradually, as they've got bored with certain color aspects, they've moved the color palette a little, but the trend is still running. So a lot of the trends run for many years. So it really comes about to what the clients are looking for. Now, I have this question sometimes asked of me. Well, why don't they buy something new? Why don't they like this kind of work? I think it's stupid that they do all these things. Now, you can say that all day long. The thing is that the buyers have their criteria. They're interested in making money and profits for the company. They create a formula. They have 6 or 7 trends. They go out to shop to the publishers and the people who manufacture products, and they tell them, this is what we're looking for. Now, one of the reasons that's so powerful these days is the decline of the mom-and-pop stores. I saw some research yesterday that said that in the gallery market particularly, I think there were 40-odd thousand galleries 2 or 3 years ago, and there are now 12,000 left. Now, that's a quarter of the galleries and the small retailers are left. Three-quarters have disappeared. In terms of the retail market, a few years back, it was 70-75% were moms and pops and independent retailers. This is for the print market that the publishers sold to. Now it's down to 20-25% the moms and pops, and they sell 75-80% of their goods, which is prints and frame prints and home accessories, to the big stores. So unfortunately, the big stores now control the marketplace in the mass market, and you have to look at that. You cannot ignore it. If you ignore it, it's at your peril. Now, the other thing that you must do, and I think anybody entering the licensing industry who is serious, you must go visit a trade show. If you're interested in gift products, stationery, and greetings cards, then you've got to go to the National Stationery Show, which is on May the 20th to the 23rd. It alters each year, and that's in New York at the Javits. Now, the beauty of that show is it runs alongside Certex, which is where artists and agents now license work. So, in a way, it's like a captive audience. All your clients are downstairs, or many of them are downstairs, and you're upstairs. And the art directors pop up, and they see the new work you've got, and it's a very good opportunity for those artists that can afford to exhibit at Certex to show their work to manufacturers who visit the show. It's also very good because there's the, I think it's called the ICF, the International Contemporary Furniture Show, and that's a really good show for people who are in the fine art business to look at trends in the furniture business. Because basically that has a bearing on what happens in the fine art side of the industry. If you're in the fine art side, posters, prints, etc., Art Expo New York, March 10th, I think it is. March the 1st to the 5th this year. And that's a very good show for those people who want to look around the industry and basically see what's going on. Publishers in the industry are all there. So all the potential clients you want to know, you get the catalogue, you walk in there, and basically come away with every name and address of every single publisher that attends. And there are German publishers, there are French publishers, Spanish publishers, all kinds of publishers there, particularly from England as well. So that's a very, very good show to attend. Craft and Hobby, Anaheim, California, 28th to the 31st of January. This is becoming a major show for artists in terms of the craft and hobby industry, and this is about scrapbooking, rubber stamps, that kind of thing. It's not something I know a lot about, but it's a very, very good industry, and for those people who really want to enter that side of it, that's a great opportunity very shortly next week to go visit that show. Gift shows. Gift shows are very difficult. There's the Atlanta Gift Show, and I think there's one in California, there's one in New York. In general, I don't advise you to go to those shows. You find it very difficult to get in. You have to have a retailer license, and they really don't want artists wandering around. They ban artists particularly because the big retailers don't want to be harassed by people. And that's where etiquette comes in at shows. And I won't really go on into that in any detail, except that you must learn how to attend a show. And in my course and book, I give some information about how to approach people at shows so you don't really upset them. Now, a question came in, and this is all to do with shows. Is it a good idea to send out invitations? Is it a good idea to get appointments? And is a show worth doing, like Certex or the licensing show? Now, in some cases, sending out invitations is a good idea if you know the companies. The problem is, in general, so many artists send out invitations that most of them end up in the trash. I would think it's more relevant to put time and energy into your presentation at the actual show, and maybe do a postcard with some fabulous work, the best piece you've done, and send the postcard out. The postcard may just spark off someone looking at an image to say, oh, we must go see that. All you've got to do is put your image, put your name, and put your booth number, and send that to, you know, people who you'd like to attend. Trying to get appointments is very, very difficult. I've been in this business a long time now, the last 2 or 3 years. It's becoming, I'm not saying possible, it's not impossible. We do get appointments. But more and more people are not making appointments. Sometimes the art directors fly in for the show and they fly back out again very quickly. And they don't like to make appointments. What they do is they wander around the show. If they see anything, they talk to you. But they really don't want to waste their time by taking up appointments with people that they really just don't know. What they tend to do is make appointments with those artists they're already working with, and the time's usually allocated to them. So is it worth doing? The artist that wrote this in, you know, did the show last year, and I don't know how much he spent, but it's a minimum of $5,000. We usually spend about 8 or 9, and that's including your space. It includes your hotel, your travel, your food, and your exhibition materials and the display. You can't do this in a cheap way. You've got to do a really, really good presentation. You've got lots of competition there. So doing a good display costs money. Is it worth doing? More and more, some of these shows are only really good for people who are really, really understand the industry. If you've got to spend $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, that's a lot of money to earn back again. And you won't earn that back again perhaps for maybe 6 to 9 months or even a year if you're lucky enough to get a license. There are many artists that attend and don't get anywhere. And they send out after the show, they send out presentation after presentation after presentation and hear nothing. That happens to us as a company. In fact, we didn't do the show last year for that reason, that we put so much time and energy into it that we felt that I can use that time and energy in traveling and visiting clients. So I did a tour of California, and I went round to see about 12 clients in 3 days, and that cost me maybe $1,000. Whereas, you know, I can do that in New York, I can do that in Atlanta area, I can spend a lot less than that money and have 3 trips a year and make it far, far more effective. And that's as an agency. That's very difficult to do as an artist. But I think that the show is worth doing at least once or twice if you are starting to get licenses and you're getting a very good reaction to your work. That's a good sign. But I think just to step into the marketplace and spend $7,000 or $8,000 just on a whim to see what happens, it's very expensive to do. So how to promote your work more effectively? This is the thing, again, that's very important. You've got to have a very, very good presentation. So if you're going to do flyers, print them on good paper. I get some of them printed on, it looks like toilet paper. I mean, so bad, the presentations that come in, they're printed badly. That shows to me somebody that doesn't know how to run a business. And again, usually those, I always reply to people, but all the leaflets end up in the trash. They're not worth keeping. So make sure that your flyers get a good printer. These days, $150 buys you an excellent printer. One of the Epson, I forgot which it is now, but it's a really good Epson one, which prints good photo quality. And I'd go for something like that, so you use good paper. CD presentations are good. And please, use little JPEGs. I got a CD presentation the other day, and there were little JPEGs of 150K. There were 1.5 megabyte files. There were TIFF files, JPEG files. It was a mess. In other words, when you're opening up files like that, they're not consistent. So make sure you just use JPEGs, 72 or 100 DPI JPEGs that are about 8x8, something like that. They're 150K, 200, 250K, no more. And obviously you don't want to send high resolution anyway out to people, you know, people you don't know. So it's important to make sure your CD presentations are good. And invest in a label software. It's simple. I mean, you can buy a little software kit to print nice labels for something like, you know, $20. So do a nice label. Put your name on it. Put your copyright symbol on it. You can look on the websites of various companies, and you'll see that they do, in fact, have submission procedures via email. Now, keep the email relatively small, maybe 2 or 3 megabytes, no more. Don't send big half, you know, 500K files. It clogs up mailboxes. I was getting stuff in, again, a few weeks ago, 1 megabyte files, and the guy sent 30 of these things. Blocked my mailbox completely. I mean, it's so stupid. You know, sending, I think he sent something like 20 megabytes through the email. Now, you don't need to do that. First of all, it's slow to open. The email box gets clogged. Send maybe 12 pieces, 150K each, nice images, a nice size. Again, don't send them too small. I got one the other day which were tiny, little 10K files that were like a postage stamp, so I couldn't even see the pictures. So again, don't go the opposite way. Make sure when they open up, send yourself a test email. Look at it and see what they're going to see before you send it. Other final thing on presentations is show your best work. Target it to suit the client. Look at what they sell and then target your very, very best work. Try to get them excited. They see probably thousands and thousands of pieces each week. So you've got to excite them. And keep it simple. Don't send long biographies and histories. That can come later. Nobody has got time to read all that irrelevant stuff. Just send the images, little short paragraph. Look at this. If you've got a website, put a link to your website. That saves time. Some people just type it in. Do a link. Go in and paste it from your web browser, paste it into your email, and then the clients can literally go to your website and have a look. So buyer wants to see the work only, so you've got to knock their socks off. And if you do send anything by mail, send a stamp-addressed envelope. If you don't send it, they go in the trash. Nobody's going to return your work. I get something like 30, 40 presentations a week. That would cost a fortune over a year if I sent them back if I didn't have a stamp-addressed envelope. Now, another question I had in over the last couple of days was, how do I know which person to target or send presentations to? It is unusual these days. You have art submissions people, you've got art directors, you've got creative directors, you have art consultants, you have art acquisitions people. So there's no easy answer. The only thing to do is look at their website. If it doesn't tell you, make a quick call to the company and say, who do I submit the work to? They'll either give you a name or they'll give you the department to send it to. And keep that up to date in your... every year, I would always keep your mailing list up to date because art directors do change quite regularly. Now, this is very, very important information for you on trends and color palettes. As I've said before, retailers look for trend-oriented work. The colorassociation.com is one. Trendhub.com, that's TrendHub.com. That's a fashion site. But is that my time? Or is a bell ringing somewhere? Trendhub.com is a fashion-oriented site. Pantone.com, again, Pantone, everybody will know Pantone. They have some very interesting information on there. Colormarketing.org and Colormatters.com. Those will help you a great deal to start to understand what the colors and trends are all about. The other thing to do is get magazines like Vogue, Elle Decor, Home Accents Today, Art World News, Art Business News. Art World News and Art Business News are for the fine art department, fine art business. Home Accents Today is very good for the fine prints for the home decor market and home accessories. So accessing test trends is very tough. We do our own report every 6 to 9 months, and it takes us probably weeks to do. We glean information from all over the webs. We get it from clients, and those artists that do my course, they get a free report, which is probably worth about $250 just for the report, because that information is very, very expensive. If you want to join the Color Association, it probably costs you $1,000, and the reports are $500 each for each section. So you could probably pay $2,000 to get all the reports. So how to research the market: trade shows, visit retailers, search the web, look at publishers' websites. When you're looking at publishers' websites, a little trick: look for the top or best sellers. New releases also give you a very good guide. So if you go in the new release section, that's what's new. Sometimes you look at a client's inventory, and a lot of it can be very old, but the new material they're doing is very different from what they've done before. So look for that at various websites. And art.com is an excellent site if you want to look up any particular print or poster. Just type in the category, and that in fact will give you a list of all the top posters. So to recap, this is basically, I'm wrapping up the session now. I hope you've learned something new, that my talk will encourage you to learn more about how licensing works. It's a business like any other, and you need to approach it in a business-like manner. So educate yourself first so you know what you're doing. And the fact you're participating in this great event, which Ariane has put together, means you must be serious about that. For those who want to know more about licensing, you know about my website. And for the time being, thank you and good luck. It's been brilliant.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's been really important information. I have learned a lot today. I have a favor to ask you. Would you send to me in an email these websites that you opened up at the very end? Just put them down for me so that I can send them on?
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you, my dear. Have a great rest of the day.
Okie dokie.
So a few quick notes before the break. This is for everyone, but especially for the artists using Earthlink email. I got cut off yesterday. If you want to receive the handouts, you have to add us to your email address book. Earthlink is giving us more trouble than I care to tell you. The addresses you have to add are info@smartist, S-M-A-R-T-I-S-T, -telesummit.com. And the second one, smartist, spelled the same way, .telesummit, smartist.telesummit@gmail.com. That's the letter G, mail.com. Someone wrote to me about staying connected during the break or breaking the phone connection, turning it off, and having trouble getting back on. It's probably because everybody's trying to get on around the same time, so you might have to gauge coming in, you know, 30 seconds later, a couple minutes earlier, or leaving it on if you think that's your best option. The recordings for yesterday are now uploaded again, and I want to thank all of you for your feedback. People have caught mistakes we've made. I have been so grateful to you. You've given us feedback that's heartwarming and invaluable. Okay, now let's take a break. In 15 minutes, you're going to come back, and I'm going to talk to you more about websites. So put your feet up or down, shake out the clutter, and come back fresh. See you in about 13 minutes.